Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, sponsored tonight by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner's Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live on BlogTalkRadio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Here's what I think I've learned about working women in the early 1960s. They worked really hard at putting on their faces in the morning. They worked equally hard at taking off their faces before bed. They strapped themselves in with elaborate brassieres and girdles, and I mean into their clothes, not into bed. Well, maybe they did, I don't know. And they really dug advertising men, and one, Don Draper, in particular. I know all this from being a loyal watcher and fan of AMC's Mad Men, now in its third season. Now, what I still don't know is what cold cream is. For example, is it actually cold? Did it do for makeup what Mr. Clean Erasers do for otherwise resistant counter stains? And what was with Peggy Olson's fat suit in season one? Joining me to reveal the secrets, I hope, of Mad Men is three-time Emmy Award nominee for makeup, Debbie Zoller. She was the makeup department head for the show's first two seasons and has since moved on to another promising new show, ABC's romantic comedy, Castle, starring Nathan Fillion, who's also been on this show. Debbie also did makeup for Pirates of the Caribbean, Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, and Star Trek films and TV shows. Debbie, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Should we start with cold cream or should we move on?
Well, funny enough, cold cream is cold. Yes, when you apply it to your face, it is cold. Yes. It's almost like putting, I guess at that time, it's almost like putting Crisco on your face. It's like lard. I mean, it's got that kind of a consistency. So, but hey, it made their skin really beautiful and supple, and that peaches and cream, you know, type of skin that everyone wanted. So it worked out very well back then.
Now that you've compared it to, you know, actual grease, I'm really grossed out. Let's move on. Maybe we'll come back to that. Maybe we won't. So first, listen, tell me and all the men like me that off camera, John Hamm is an average schlub like the rest of us, but in your care, and only in your care, he becomes a god among men.
Well, I wish I could, but John kind of exudes coolness. You know, he walks in with it, you know, with his, you know, Bermuda shorts on and his flip-flops and his, you know, hair that doesn't have the, you know, the Brill cream in it. He's just kind of woken up and driven to work. And, you know, he walks in looking amazing and he walks out, you know, looking amazing. So I really wish I could give you, you know, some kind of dirt on him, but he's a man's man, let me tell you.
Oh, that is so sad for the rest of us.
I know. I know. And I've been to his house. He has a beautiful home. You know, he's playing all of it right. He made a good deal with somebody. He's doing it all right.
With the devil, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand he's got a lovely girlfriend, too.
Yes. Yes, he does. Jennifer, who's lovely. Yes. She is, you know, an amazing actress in her own right. So, there's a very lucky family right there. So,
well, to quote Charlie Brown, John Hamm, how I hate him. But seriously, what could the rest of us? You worked with him for the past 2 years. The previous 2 years. What could the rest of us learn from the way he is presented or presents himself, or the care that for example, that you gave him? You know, to give him a certain look.
Well, I have to say that the one thing about that period is that the men were very, very closely shaved, you know, and I would sometimes have to shave him twice a day to keep, you know, that look on him. And nowadays, you know, guys really like that kind of 3 and 4 day growth. So guys aren't really used to shaving that much these days, I have to say. And, you know, it looks great and it looks appropriate, but there's just something about that really smooth, clean shave. And I got all the guys on the show, including John Hamm, turned on to products called the Art of Shaving. I don't know if you've ever heard of their products, but they have like a 4-product kit that you use that has like a pre-shave oil and one of those little brush things that you use to shave, you know, with a straight razor. And then there's an aftershave lotion. And with those 4 things, I swear, it's changed their life when it comes to shaving.
Wow.
So that's the one thing I do have to say. And those guys really, all of them, you know, including John Hamm, but all of the guys on the show, Vinny and Brian Batt and everyone, all did me, you know, the tremendous favor of shaving every day. So I think that's one of the things from the 60s that, you know, exudes kind of that cool attitude.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the shaving. I wanted to ask you about that because in the now I know you're not on the show with the third season, but last night in the premiere of the third season, the first episode, John, it was clear he had a Richard Nixon thing going with this. I don't know if you watched the episode, but he had like a you know, that 5 o'clock shadow plus 10.
Oh, interesting. Well, there were times when I would, you know, depending on how the script dictated, when I would be allowed to show that 5 o'clock shadow, like when he came home from work, you know, late at night, mm-hmm. we were allowed to kind of show that. But if it was anything longer than, you know, just a night of growth, that was, you know, for those 2 seasons, that was a no-no. I'm sure, you know, now that they're into their third season, they are, you know, definitely changing, the year's changing, you know, things like that are maybe a little more lax. Maybe Matt Weiner, the executive producer, writer, wants to show maybe a different side of John, you know, of Don Draper. So. Mm. I don't know.
Go ahead. So you were with the show the first 2 seasons, right? You were there at the beginning.
Yeah, I designed the show the first 2 seasons, and, you know, out of issues that happened, you know, personally with my family, I was unable to join them for the 3rd season. So I wish them well and, you know, the best of luck. And they still have some of the people that were in my department carrying on, you know, the legacy. So, which is great because that, you know, my designs are still there.
Well, and tell me, let's talk about that. When you say, you know, you design the show, your title was a makeup department head. Mm-hmm. Tell people what that exactly means, especially when you're coming at a period show like this. It's set at that time, I think the late 58, 59. What do you do exactly?
Well, the amount of research that I needed to do for that show was, you know, astronomical, and I didn't have much time because I was coming off of another show. When you are the department head, you are in charge of basically everything, of designing every look for every character, hiring, you know, the people that work, you know, with you that can help you implement the things necessary for that particular show. So I not only had, you know, the period work, but I also had the prosthetics, you know, Peggy's fat suit, as you had mentioned in season 1. You know, Matt wanted to make sure that people didn't realize why she was gaining weight, what the true reason was. So we had to do many tests on that and find, you know, just the amount of, you know, correct weight prosthetic to put on her face so that it wasn't a huge jump and people are like, whoa, you know, and it looked so real that even people on the set didn't know that she had prosthetics on her face, which is obviously a huge compliment for us. But the amount of research that I had to do for that period, you know, every character was kind of based on someone else. Like Joan is based on a model, a very famous redheaded model from the 60s by the name of Susie Parker. And January is based on Princess Grace Kelly. So, you know, a lot of those things I would take from, you know, Life magazine, Look magazine. I was on eBay all the time, sometimes actually competing against my own people for 60s memorabilia. Like, the art department would be bidding on the same books that I was bidding on, and then finally somebody figured it out. And it's like, hey, wait a minute. So we were jacking the price up for no reason. So it was very funny.
Sure, it was great for the seller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, before we realized it.
Well, let's pick up with Peggy, and before we do, I have a little bit of audio I'd like to play for people who may be joining the show late or maybe just want to remember this. So give a listen to this.
Okay.
We had seen her throughout the season gaining weight.
I ripped my skirt.
We went through a very, very slow process of making her get sort of bigger and bigger. The only way it was going to work is if it was really subtle and really real. So it started out with just a couple like pads here and there, and then it became actual suits underneath my clothes, and we added the makeup, so there were two stages of prosthetic makeup. So it was a very sort of long and detailed process, and some people suspected, but a shocking amount of people didn't guess that one.
No one knew she was pregnant.
No one knew she was pregnant. She was getting larger.
I really wanted to tell that story about a woman going to work, being sexualized, and her reaction to this was to literally stop being as female.
Why is it that every time a man takes you out to lunch around here, you're the dessert?
She's learning how to be a woman in this sort of man's world.
Elizabeth Moss was amazing, and continues to be amazing, but in that first season, so it wasn't in the script, so I guess what you're saying and what I heard in that audio is that the rest of the cast didn't necessarily know that that's what was happening with her character.
Right. Well, that was the funniest thing, is that I happened to overhear it because Matt Weiner was talking to the costume designer about putting pads on her, and I just happened to be standing, thank you, God, in the right place at the right time, because I'm like, well, what do you mean putting pads on her? And Matt just looked at me and he goes, oh, my God. He goes, I forgot to tell you, didn't I? I'm like, what did you forget to tell me? And so he's like, you know, he's very, very secretive. You know, he doesn't want to spoil anything for anybody, including people on the crew, which is really funny. But he's like, I completely forgot to tell you that this is how, you know, this is Peggy's arc for this season. I'm like, how could you forget to tell me? So, of course, then, you know, we go into, you know, overdrive because I think at that point we were on episode 8 or 9, and I had to start putting prosthetic pieces on her by, you know, 10 or 11. So I only had a couple episodes to get all of that done and get the test done and make sure that it was appropriate, you know, just as she had mentioned in her interview, that it was subtle enough yet effective enough and flawless.
Was she kind of an unindicted co-conspirator in this? How much did she participate?
She, I have to say, was an incredibly willing party. And for an actress to have to go through that kind of change, you know, to see themselves that way, sometimes it's not an easy process. And I have to say, she was absolutely one of the most brilliant people I've ever worked with in this situation, because we would have to do tests on her after she would wrap, you know, a day's work. And I would say, would you mind, you know, please coming in so that, because, and she knew that Matt Weiner needs to see everything, every character prior to going on screen has to have a camera test. So she knew what she was in for at this point, you know, regardless if it's, you know, a day player or whatever, she knew she was in for something really spectacular. And she really, I'd never heard one complaint. I always, you know, heard, you know, thank you, this looks amazing, I'm so appreciative, because she really bit off that character and really went with it, which, you know, obviously because of, you know, the building of her character is why she's now, you know, nominated for an Emmy as well. So, and I'm very, very happy for her because she certainly, certainly deserves it.
Well, it was just fascinating to watch that happen. You know, as she was getting heavier and heavier, and it really wasn't until I guess the facial makeup that we you know, we were kind of like, she must be pregnant. We actually had this conversation. Would they really have let the actress put on that much weight for a show that only has, what, 10 to 12 episodes?
Right, exactly. But, you know, it's interesting because people even called me when we got nominated for the prosthetic category for the first season. They were like, what prosthetics did you do? You know, what was it? And I said, oh, this is good. I said, well, you know, you'll have to watch it again and you'll have to look at, you know, this particular character, Elizabeth Moss, because she's got a fat-faced prosthetic on. People had no idea. They had no idea.
And
it was really hard because we were shooting under fluorescent lighting because, you know, the lighting was very reminiscent of what office lighting looked like in the 60s. That was the other, you know, issue that we had to tackle was to make sure that we color corrected as we painted it so that when she walked on set, you know, it didn't stand out as a prosthetic.
Mm. Now, there were two other women on the show really stand out in terms of and I want to say this right because I don't want to get in trouble, but kind of the body types. I mean, you had January Jones at one end of the spectrum, and neither of these women I don't think needed or used any kind of prosthetics or padding or lack of padding. But January Jones at one end, very thin, very traditional model type, as you mentioned, kind of Grace Kelly, and then Christina Hendricks as Joan Holloway, who was a Zoftig, voluptuous, Rubenesque. I'm trying to find the right words here. Woman, now
she,
how
she really oozed, that sexuality. Yet at the same time, it wasn't, grossly overplayed. She just is, her body herself is amazing. And Janie, the costume designer, would put those specific undergarments on her that would really even bring out those curves even more.
Yeah, is that it? Is it the undergarments?
A lot of it is, yes. I mean, they didn't have padding or anything, but she used authentic undergarments from the 1960s. And then the cut of the clothing also helped to accentuate those specific curves. So, I mean, she did an amazing job, really.
Oh,
and Christina's one of my favorite characters because she just, just looks fantastic.
I think the term is va 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 voom.
that's exactly it.
I think that's
it.
The technical term, right?
That's exactly it. And I had to be really careful with her makeup because I had to make sure it wasn't, trampy or slutty or anything like that. She had to, be the head of the secretaries because she had to have, the authority, yet at the same time be sexually attractive to, Roger, the men in the office, and and she speaks with her eyes. So, everyone just couldn't take their eyes off of her.
I think what she does with her eyes is she purrs with her eyes.
That's a good way of looking at it, yes.
Now, is that, I have the benefit here of I'm looking at pictures of the cast. Is that her actual hair or is that a wig on her that we see?
She has red hair, but there's a piece in the back that's called a wiglet that is added to her hair because, when they have to go through that process on a daily basis, it really takes a toll on, especially like with January, her hair would get really dried out if they over curled it with, hot irons and curlers. And so the hairdressers really had to take extreme care of these ladies' hair. And the best thing they could do was to add wiglets and pieces like that that are already done. And that way they didn't harm their hair even more.
And, it's interesting. I also thought of her. She was in she's in Esquire this month and just as herself. And, she's just a remarkable-looking woman. You don't see women in anywhere that are built like her.
No, you don't. And I think that's why she's so perfect for this show. And, Matt Weiner really made a point of handpicking each person and making sure that each woman, had curves, that they weren't, super, super skinny or that they had augmented certain things because they didn't have that back in the 60s as much as they do now. So you have to be really careful. Also, too, it takes place in New York. And so a lot of, you know, because we shoot out here, a lot of the women that would come in and read as actresses would be really tan because it's L.A. So they wanted to make sure that, you know, they had that kind of pasty, pale New York winter-looking skin.
Mm. Well, there's no doubt that, I mean, January Jones and Christina Hendricks and Elizabeth Moss, all, when they're on in the show, clearly, they're pasty-looking New Yorkers on the show. There's no doubt. Now, what about January Jones, who, as you mentioned, was, you know, you kind of had Grace Kelly in mind. She's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum from Christina Hendricks, was, you know, the very thin, very, you know, model.
January's character really came alive second season. And the thing that I, as a makeup artist, when you do makeup, you're telling a story prior to even the audience knowing what the story is. So depending on the makeup and the hair and the wardrobe, you as an audience member are going to deduce, who this person is before they've even said a word out of, you know, their mouth. So when I'm designing each character, that's what I'm thinking of in my head. And with January, you know, January always wanted to be heard, you know, her character wanted to be heard. So I always really, really focused on her lips and making sure that her lips were just the perfect definition. Where Christina, it was more about her eyes. And with, you know, Elizabeth Moss, it was more of that kind of, oops, sorry, standing out on the street here. It was more of that kind of doe-eyed, Audrey Hepburn kind of look, because as you said, she got thrown into a man's world and she's, you know, she doesn't know really what the game is. All she knows is that she's in it and she's got to play. So that's how I kind of designed each one. And with January, I mean, she's just one of the most beautiful women that I think I've ever had the opportunity to put makeup on. And she just became that character every day when she sat in my chair. And it was such a pleasure to do her makeup every day. It really was amazing because she's just stunning.
Well, I want to pick up on there's a live web chat that accompanies the live Mr. Media interviews, and Felix in New Jersey says, Jan looks super. Hard to believe Don would fool around on her. And I think a lot of people have felt that way, that you see this spectacular-looking woman, and I don't know. I'm reminded of something Tommy Lee said that was rather crude about Pam Anderson, but, you know, he says, show me any guy who goes home to a beautiful woman, and I'll show you a guy who's tired of, you know. And I mean, what do you think that's all about? I mean, I know that's more script involvement, but I mean, does that happen in real life? Like a guy goes home to someone that?
You know, I think, you know, a majority of this is, you know, concocted out of, you know, Matt Weiner's head. But the 60s was very much, everything was kind of in the closet, you know, as like Brian Bat's character. Everything is kind of, you know, overtones and subtleties. And I honestly believe that at that time, a lot of this kind of stuff did go on, but people didn't talk about it. They didn't know about it. There wasn't, you know, Twitter and blogging and Facebook and, you know, we weren't a part of that kind of, you know, everybody has to know everybody's status every minute. So people did do things that were maybe not, socially acceptable, and they would do it, but they wouldn't talk about it. And, you know, thank you to Matthew Weiner. He's bringing it all out into the forefront. There was a scene where January puts her daughter in the closet to, you know, to kind
right.
of like a punishment. And that right. actually did happen to me in the 60s when I was a little kid. I had a babysitter that's how she would babysit me. She would stick me in the closet. So he draws a lot of his scenes from things that happened to him in his own life and his family and families that he grew up with and knew. And that's one of the most brilliant things about Matthew Weiner, is how he brings all that out, and it's so uncomfortable, yet it's like a train wreck. You can't stop watching it. You can't turn away.
You know, it's funny, Debbie, you mentioned that, you know, they didn't have Twitter back then, but it made me laugh because right before the premiere last night, I noticed I checked in on Twitter, and all of the characters from Mad Men have Twitter accounts in their name as characters.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
there were all these crazy references going on all night from the characters tweeting online.
Great.
So, let me ask you, we were going to end in about 5 minutes. Can you run over a few minutes? Do you have a couple minutes?
I have a couple minutes. I do have an actress coming in at 4:30, so I have to kind of tie it up. Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you. Let's change gears a little bit. You've joined Castle, and Nathan Fillion was on our show in the spring. Seemed like a fine guy. How are the challenges different from doing a contemporary show versus a period piece?
Oh, wow. You know, I love the fact that I get both ends of the spectrum. And Nathan, I have to say, is one of the most amazing guys. Like, he's like a John Hamm. He's a man, and he just exudes this really, like, natural, just awesome kind of guy that, you know, you want to be friends with and you just want to hang out with. And his character on Castle is very, very similar. And he's got a great sense of humor and he's incredibly intelligent. And I really have to say, I couldn't have asked, if I had to leave Mad Men under the circumstances that I did, I am very blessed to have been able to join up with this show and, you know, benefit from the humor and the writing and be surrounded by as intelligent people as I was on Mad Men. So, because they challenge me on a daily basis here.
and how much work does Nathan need week to week from makeup?
Oh, Nathan is similar to the John Hamm situation. He shaves in the morning, but he shaves with a different type of shaver. I call it the Don Johnson, which is that, you know, shaver. It's the electric shaver, right, but it doesn't, you know, go all the way down to the base of the hair. So he does that in the morning, and, you know, he comes in, and basically, you know, maybe he gets 10 minutes in my chair, but, you know, another 10 is just talking and laughing and, you know, comparing notes and, you know, looking at websites, and he, you know, tells me funny stories, and, you know, it's just, it's great entertainment in the morning. So it gets you going. He's like a you know, big, tall cup of coffee.
For anyone who didn't see it in the spring when it debuted, it's a really fun show. It's a romantic comedy. There's a lot of good repartee. It's very Moonlighting-like, if you're old enough to remember that show.
Definitely.
Now, let's bounce through these quickly. I just want to ask you, what kind of contributions did you make to the Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End and the Kill Bill films that you worked on?
Oh, wow. Well, Quentin and I, he worked on a couple other movies prior to that, and he was telling me about Inglourious Basterds, which he was writing at the time, and I was doing a movie with him called Little Nicky with Adam Sandler, and that's how we met, and then we just became friends, and he called me and said, you know, I'm going to do this movie called Kill Bill, and I'd really love for you to be a part of it. And I think I was one of the first people that, you know, was lucky enough to be called. And I said, you know, I don't care. I'll do whatever you want. And I was lucky enough to be able to work with him. And I have to say, he is incredibly infectious as a director and really inspires people to want to do their best work. And we had a great time on that show. I truly have the utmost respect for that band. And I don't know what I did, but I've been very blessed to work with some amazing people. And, you know, Gore Verbinski the same way. My friend and my mentor, actually, is the department head on the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. And I worked with her, and she would, you know, every day, you know, throw me various characters, whether it was, you know, the mushroom men that were sitting in those tubs with mushrooms growing all over them, or, you know, doing 7 of Johnny Depp's doubles, you know, from head to toe. I had to hand draw all those tattoos when he was, there was one scene where he was hallucinating on the ship and there was like 7 or 8 of him hanging all over the place. And those were all of his doubles. So I had to quickly get, you know, 7 guys ready with tattoos and facial hair and, you know, copy the makeup. And it was a challenge every day that, you know, made me a better makeup artist. And wow. I love doing those movies and have had a great time on it. And I just, you know, spoke with a couple people, and it looks like there is going to be a 4 and 5, you know, most likely starting next year. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Looking forward to working on them, I assume?
Yes. Very much so.
And as we kind of wind down, because I don't want to keep you from your appointment, what's the biggest misconception that most people have about what you do?
Oh, wow. Probably the biggest misconception is that they think we just kind of sit around all day. Like you put makeup on somebody and, you know, when they come in and then that's it. And what people don't realize is that it's constant maintenance and understanding lighting and understanding storylines and arcs of characters and, you know, especially now with HD being, you know, such a powerful influence, makeup changes now, and how you apply it and the type of makeup completely changes with HD. So luckily we are not shooting in HD on this show, but it's going to be a very interesting challenge when, you know, when they do make the switch, because everything changes, and it's a constant, you know, learning about, you know, people and because, you know, I infiltrate their comfort zone and their bubbles, and, you know, you get very, very close in proximity to people and emotionally. So, you know, when I left Mad Men, it was almost like, you know, I was in mourning because it's, you know, that's your family. So,
right.
You know, we are working together 18 hours a day, and we sometimes fight like family and make up like family, and you know, it's literally like being with, you know, 150 of your closest friends. So
wow.
I think people think that, oh, you know, they just kind of hang out and have a good time, and it's truly a lot of work. But, you know, if you have the passion for it, then you don't feel like you're working.
Well, folks, you can catch Debbie Zoller's latest work in the second season of Castle, starring Nathan Fillion, and that returns this September on ABC. And you can catch some of her Emmy-nominated work in the first two seasons of Mad Men, now available on DVD at the MR Media, Mr. Media site, or Amazon.com. And Debbie, I'm guessing that your big day is September 12th, the Creative Arts Emmy Awards?
Yes, that's exactly. That's our big day, yeah.
And I have the nominees in front of me. Just share this with people. You are up against an episode of Grey's Anatomy, an episode of Little Britain, USA, Nip Tuck, and I have to admit this is a tough one for me, Pushing Daisies, which I think had some amazing makeup. So
amazing. Yeah, we were up against them, you know, last year as well. And you have to understand, all of those people are all really, really close friends of mine. So it's funny because we just kind of all look at each other and go, well, you know, it's a coin toss at this point. But we're all happy for each other. We really are. And it's a good time to let your hair down and have some fun.
Absolutely. And listen, best of luck in the awards. And Debbie, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. It was fascinating to talk to you about all this.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was awesome talking to you.
All right. Well, best of luck, and hopefully we'll get to talk again.
Yes, absolutely. Sounds great.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And folks, for dozens of interviews with your favorite TV stars, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my conversations with the stars of Army Wives, Chuck, Castle, Nathan Fillion, Lost, Psych, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Digital Journal, Vox, Podcast Pickle, Mediafly, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Talk to you real soon, and here, let's go out with a moment from Castle.
Castle, what are you doing?
Promise not to hate me.
I already hate you.
Fair enough. This morning, with the body, I took a couple of pictures.
You took photos of my privacy?
Well, you get mad, I emailed a couple of them to a friend of mine.
You emailed them to a friend?
Well, not exactly a friend. She's my interior decorator, but then we slept together, so I don't really know what she is now.
What the hell were you thinking?
I know, right? You work together, you think it'll be fun, but then it always makes things weird. It's a real cautionary tale.
Castle?